Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, a podcast book club. I am one of your hosts, Christina, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow shadow hunters, Kim and Anna. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
I was going to say my two parabatais, but you can't have more than one parabatai.
So nerdy.
That would be tricky.
Can't have more than one.
I mean, we could like petition the enclave or something, but you know. Difficult.
They seem to be pretty like sticklers for the rules. I doubt it would pass.
Yeah. Only the older generation, though. The younger generation just do whatever the heck they want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well. I mean, we'd be best friends with the younger generation anyway, so. Okay, so clearly we have Shadowhunters on our mind. So we are in the Shadowhunter world, mm-hmm. If you couldn't tell. And we are going to be talking about Chain of Iron today, Cassandra Clare's new book that is a part of the Shadowhunter universe.
Yes.
Newest book in the Last Hours trilogy. And the source of me staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning last night and having...
Same.
A mental anxiety attack in bed until around 2, yep. And then waking
totally
up.
Totally there with you.
And yep. Texting
100%.
The two of you, literally just, what the fuck just happened? That was the text
like,
I
literally
sent this morning at 7:30.
I had that entire meme from The Office of Jim being like, what is going on?
Yeah,
like from the moment,
like
the moment,
times.
Like, yeah, the last 1/5 of the book, I was just the whole time, I was like, what is going on?
I know.
This
literally.
Is happening right now.
What is going on? And like everything is going on. Like everything is happening, but I also
everything
don't understand.
Is happening, but also what is happening?
But also,
I didn't
what
understand.
Happening?
It was too. It was
yes.
So much. But we'll get
yeah.
into that.
So we have very. We have
very
a lot of built up feelings for this. So maybe
lots
we should just
feelings.
Jump right in.
Let's jump in.
Okay. So let's before we jump into Chain of Iron, let's do Chain of Gold. So Chain of Gold came right before Chain of Iron in this Last Hours trilogy, and we are set directly after the Infernal Devices in the Shadowhunter world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Anna, do you want to do a quick Chain of Gold recap, SparkNotes brief version for us? So we're
100%.
Like 100%.
I'm going to blaze through this.
Okay, yes.
All right, so for all of you tuning in, this is obviously going to be spoilers for book one.
Oh, yes.
But if
spoiler
you
alert.
Haven't read Chain of Iron yet and you just want a little brief reminder, you can always just tune into this part and then
come back when you've read Chain of Iron.
Yeah,
come
listen
back,
to the rest.
Yeah, come back after you read it.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. Cliff Notes
here
version with the primary highlights, give or take. What you need to know that's really important.
What
okay.
you need to know with Anna. Go.
What you need to know.
I like that.
What you need to know with Anna, right. All right, here we go. So Cordelia Carstairs is a shadow hunter. She has just moved to London and is secretly in love with her childhood friend, James Herondale, who is secretly in love with his childhood friend, Grace Blackthorne, who has also just moved to town.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with me. It's confusing. Cordelia is also best friends with James' little sister, Lucy Herondale. They mm-hmm. plan on being parabatais. Also, Lucy and James are Will and Tessa's children from the Infernal Devices.
Aww.
They, along with their other best friends, whose parents we also know from the Infernal Devices, make up what they call the Merry Thieves, which, in addition to James, Lucy, and Cordelia, is comprised of Matthew Fairchild, Thomas Lightwood, and Christopher Lightwood.
Yeah.
All right. So, the beginning. Grace Blackthorne shows up. She's angsty and rude and mysterious and is unclear why James loves her. We have no idea. Might have something to do, though, with the freaking cursed bracelet she gave him when they were, like, 14 years old that compels him, so whatever.
The
her
bracelet.
Mother to...
the
mother...
Oh, the bracelet.
The bracelet, as we call it.
Yes.
Her mother, Tatiana, is crazy. Her brother Jesse is dead, but is a ghost. And Lucy, who, if you don't remember, is James's sister and going to be Cordelia's paramatai, can see him because the Herondales can see ghosts. Yep. So there we go. All right. We found out Belial, who is a prince of hell, is James and Lucy's grandfather. What? And he has a showdown with James in the Shadow Realm because he wants to possess James so that he can walk the earth. So fun. Oh, Cordelia is a badass, wounds Belial with her sword, Cortana, and saves James. Yay. All right. At some point, Grace throws a hissy fit. I don't remember when this happens, but at some point she gets mad and she takes the curse bracelet off of James. Yay, we're all so excited. James feels like a fog has lifted. He remembers all these things from his childhood with Cordelia. And he's like, oh my God, I love Cordelia, not Grace. And we're all like, yay, finally. And they kiss and we're like, yay. Anyways, Titania.
Little did we know.
I keep calling her Titania like this is Midsummer.
I was thinking that too.
Tatiana, Grace's mom, is evil and nuts and going to set evil demons loose on the city. Grace puts the bracelet back on James. What the fuck? And compels him to set fire to her family home. Why she does that, it's kind of weird. No idea.
Right.
I can't remember.
And when Titania. Why do I keep doing that?
It's very similar. It's okay.
And when Tatiana accuses James of arson in front of the Enclave, Cordelia stands up, giving him a fake alibi of being with her in her bedroom all night. What? Scandalous. To save her reputation, Cordelia and James agree to pretend to be married for a year, and Grace is not pleased. And that's where we leave off.
Things you need to know, Adana.
Things you need to know.
Okay. So that was the perfect intro. Perfect. That is where we leave off our best friend, Mary Thieves. Let's tell our, or try very hard to tell our spoiler-free general thought reviews before we jump into spoiler town. So let's start with Kim. What is your general, broad, spoiler-free review? Yes.
So overall, I really enjoyed the first 80% of the book. I was so happy to be back with all of these characters that we love and know so well. And I really love that at this point, like, you have so much history and knowledge of not just these characters and their parents and their grandparents and just this whole Shadowhunters world and, like, what these kids' descendants go on to do. I really enjoy that. I do think someone that picked up just this series or maybe even just Infernal Devices in the last hours probably wouldn't get the full effect.
Totally.
But overall, I mean, it's unfortunately the last 20% went off the rails a little bit for me. And it does, at this point, it did kind of taint my overall experience with the book just because I did have some pretty big issues. And no one is more disappointed by that than me because I have loved all of these books. Even the Mortal Instruments, I overall enjoyed them except for some disturbing things. But we'll get into that.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. But yeah, I mean, overall, I love the characters. I love the world. I love Edwardian London. It is my favorite setting of all of the Shadowhunter books. But was a little bit miffed about the ending.
Yeah.
I would agree.
You want to go next, Anna?
I mean, I don't want to, like, I think Kim said it all pretty well. I mean, it's just, so here's the thing. The only big difference is that I am, like, I wasn't a huge Cassandra Clare fan after The Mortal Instruments because I was actually very irritated with some of the things that she did in that book. And then, as you can recall, I skipped book 4 and 5 and I just read book 6 so that I could then read Dark Artifices.
Which was, honestly, to be fair, our guidance to you.
Our suggestion. Like,
We'll tell you what happens. You go to space because we just wanted you to get to Dark Artifices.
Yeah, I mean, I love this. I love this time period. I love anything historical. I think she has created a fantastic world. Her world building skills are just, you know, superb. Like, anyways, we're going to talk about that later. But I just think she's really repeating a lot of tropes and it's getting a little bit tiresome and frustrating. The banter is top notch. The characters are well conceived. That is not the issue. It's just even the overall plot is interesting. It's just the way that it's articulated just is very repetitive.
Totally,
I would agree with that.
A lot of her series, and that is frustrating, especially at the end when you're just like, okay, well, we know where this is going, and
it's frustrating.
Okay. Yep. Fine.
Christina?
Yeah. So, okay. So I overall enjoyed the ride of this book. I feel like I read these books for the characters, especially this trilogy or these last hours.
Yeah. 100%.
I am especially really invested in these characters, and I ultimately felt happy with and excited and like glad with my time I got with them. I feel like the time I got with the characters was fulfilling to me throughout the ride. I think because I just read it last night, the emotions of the ending are like kind of surpassing that at the moment. But that's, I think that ultimately I feel really happy I got this time with the characters. I feel like
she knows how to write the banter.
Yeah, the I feel good on so that great. Level. It's just difficult for me to like, I overall enjoyed it. I did. I think it's clearly, she's doing something right. If I finished the book last night and I actively miss these characters like they are people, go hang out with them right now.
Yeah, and that 100%.
So that in and of itself, I felt like that was an overall positive of the book. I just, it's hard for me to emotionally struggle with the ending and where it left those characters I love so much. Like, I feel mad at Cassandra for putting them in this situation. Like, I feel like I love them as people, and she's done something shitty to my friends, is how I am.
She did them dirty.
I mean, it always shows a good author when they can, like, make you feel something.
And to be real, after reading this many Cassandra Clare books, I shouldn't be this surprised. I really shouldn't have been this shocked, I think. I just felt very... This is the first time from her I think I have felt almost manipulated by her. Mm-hmm. And before, I think I've just been like, oh, that's her. Man, what a cliffhanger. And for some reason this time it got under my skin that I was like, you sneaky. Like, something felt different. Yeah. I, again, overall enjoyed it. I wouldn't have not read it. Like, I wouldn't say, oh, don't read it because of the ending. I think it was a great book.
I'm going to read the third one.
Exactly. 100%. I can't 100%. Wait till if the third one was out right now, I would pay so much money to read the third one right now. Like, same. The amount of money I would pay.
Well, the ending is, like, very, you really don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder if she did that on purpose.
Which, again.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, seriously. Again, shows a good author. This is all, you know, but it's just... Oh, okay. I don't think we can keep it much longer. Okay,
so here we go. From here on out, we are talking about Chain of Iron, and there are going to be spoilers galore. There could possibly be spoilers for her other series. I mean,
I think there definitely might for a lot.
Yeah, keep in mind, this is the fourth series in this world she's written, and then also there are novellas in between.
Yeah.
If you have read everything and you've read
Chain of Iron, or if you don't care about reading the other series, then
or if you just want to hear about it. Buckle up. Here we go. Okay.
Here we go. Let's do
it. Warning, warning, warning. Spoilers from here on. And go.
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 Okay. What the fuck? Okay.
Let's talk about the positives first.
Yes. Okay.
So let's calm
Majority of the book was positive. Okay.
Agreed.
Oh, I'm fanning myself.
Let's talk about the relationships.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of them.
Oh, the relationships.
They're so good,
and
you guys.
And I will say, Cassandra Clare knows how to write relationships, and she doesn't, and I'm not just talking about like a typical like man-woman love relationship. Like, she writes friendships.
Oh,
I would say unlike a lot of other, authors of her genre.
Totally.
I think she's in a unique position also, though, that she's created for herself, because she has these, the Parabatai bond, which is unique to the Shadowhunter world. And it's basically, when you have two best friends, and it can be boy, girl, girl, or boy, girl. It doesn't matter. You just can't be, it's not a love match.
It's pretty much the friendship version of Fated Mates.
Yes.
Like, it's like the friendship Fated Mates.
Yes.
100%. Great. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah. That is a great way to describe it.
And it's beautiful.
Right. And because of that bond, though, it's kind of allowed her to have these, I feel like in so many books you see like female relationships. Sarah J. Maas writes fantastic female relationships.
Totally.
Yes, but she does. You rarely see really strong male bonds where they're not afraid to show emotion and talk about their feelings and show
she
affection.
Does it so well. Oh, yes, the affection.
She does that. The affection,
actual physical,
and it's not,
affection is handled so well.
And I think it's still, men are still currently there's so many men who are like, you don't show how much you care, or, you know, you don't cry, you don't, it's sad. And in this world, with this bond that she's created, the parapetai bond, I don't know, just watching like Matthew and James, and I mean, the love.
Yeah.
It's not romantic, but it is so deep and it is so profound.
So sweet. And with all of them, like the whole group of boys, there's this scene when Thomas is like held in the sanctuary and all the boys are kneeling around him. And James is like so upset and scared for Thomas. And he like...
Oh yeah, I have it right here.
Oh, yeah.
I can read the quote. It says, yeah. James, already kneeling, laid his head on Thomas's knee for a moment. He could hear Christopher and Thomas breathing, sense their worry. He felt Thomas's hand rough against his hair. Thomas was trying to comfort him, James realized, though Thomas was the one in trouble. These are my brothers, he thought. All around me, I would do anything for them.
Oh, and my heart.
I could cry.
The fact that he's not he's talking about the physicality of it. Like, they're not afraid to touch each other, to show affection.
Yeah,
And it's, if you see a female friendship do that.
Yeah.
You don't think anything of it, really, because it's talked about a lot more, and women are just...
She does it
in
so
this culture
well.
A little bit more affectionate, I guess, in that way, or it's more accepted, I should say.
Yeah.
And but when you see that nowadays, when you read it, honestly, like, you kind of go, oh, is there a love interest here? Like, why else would they be touching each other like that? And that's just really where our culture is with in regards to male friendships. And it's sad.
And I think that is also because she has instilled it from the beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She's really written into this world. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
It's totally normal to show affection.
Which it should be. And it is in real normal life. Like, you know, it's just, what Cassandra Clare's always excelled at are these characters. Like, she excels at writing characters. She is a great world builder as well. But the heart of her stories, and I think what brings the reader back are the characters.
What brings me back.
Yeah, are these characters. And they're, especially their relationships with each other. And because she has woven these threads so beautifully and geniusly through all of these books, you then, as a reader, get to, you know, pop into Edwardian London and Los Angeles in 2000, whatever, and all these things. And because of these relationships and these, like, overarching family trees and all the details of the world building, you automatically, no matter where you are, feel comfortable. You feel like a familiarity. You feel like, oh, I'm in the Shadowhunter world with my friends. Mm-hmm. And it's something she, like, brings you into their relationships and in their, like, family so well that it feels comforting to read the books. And you feel like you know the families and the ancestors and people. It's just so well done.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
It is. Yeah. So on relationships, adding on to that, I also really like how she wrote Anna and Ariadne. There we go. Yeah, I really love how she wrote Anna.
I love that relationship.
Anna and Ariadne's relationship.
Or actually Kamala. Kamala.
Yeah. It's apparently Ariadne's real name because she's apparently adopted, which we just threw that nugget in this episode.
We didn't really get as much of them in the... We didn't get Anna. Did we get Anna's POV at all in Chain of Gold?
No, I don't think we got it. It was talked about, but it wasn't... You didn't see them together.
We didn't get her POV, right?
No.
Yeah.
And... Yeah.
So that was really cool.
I mean, in so many of these fantasy, you know, paranormal books, it's usually just like a cis guy-girl relationship.
Yeah.
And you don't, I mean, there might be a gay character involved, but you don't usually see it from their point of view.
She's done that from the beginning in such a beautiful way that is how it should be in every book.
I loved them. I also loved how casually they threw out that Matthew is bi, and we know that Magnus is also bi because he's like in a relationship with, how do you say her name?
Hypaxia.
Hypaxia.
Yeah.
I just kind of love how it's not a big deal.
It's not a thing.
It shouldn't be. And I don't know if this is, but because in the Mortal Instruments, isn't it a big deal?
It is a big deal.
So is it just not a big deal in their, like, in this immediate friend group, but it's a big deal at the Enclave, possibly? Because Anna and Ari struggle with that.
They do.
Because Ari's, like, wanted to wanted to be accepted, so she broke it off with Anna.
Charles and Alistair also, remember? Because Charles tells him, like, I want to be the consul, so I can't be in a relationship with you.
Yeah. So I think the Enclave has a... Yeah, I think it's like the Enclave is, you know, their governing factor. I think they have a huge problem with it.
I think something about these, I don't want to call them kids, but these leads, as opposed to Mortal Instruments and Dark Artifice leads, are, you know, these Matthew, Christopher, Thomas,
James,
you know, Lucy,
Cordelia.
James, all of them, Cordelia, are still or have just moved out of their parents' house. And their parents are very accepting and open and all these
100%
things. 100%. All of the leads in the other ones are living with no parent, no adults. They are, like, in it with the Enclave.
Oh, that's
like,
so interesting.
They are the person.
You're right. In the modern day world, they're all orphans, pretty much.
They are the one dealing, ones, like, talking to the Enclave, talking to the council. Yeah. Like, they're the ones dealing with the repercussions.
But also, Anna's pretty openly, I mean, she wears men's clothes.
Oh, yeah.
That's because her family just doesn't, her family accepts her for who she is.
But I'm saying, like, the Enclave, like, has, like.
They might not care if you're not trying to.
Be the consul.
If you're not trying to be the consul or the inquisitor.
Maybe, yeah.
Or something. They might not, they just might turn a blind eye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, well, let's talk about the main relationship in this book.
Georgia, did you just come up with that?
No, I saw it on Instagram.
I was like, there's no way.
Georgia?
Georgia.
It sounds like an STD.
Georgia.
Oh, Georgia. That still sounds like an STD. I don't know.
Why would it be Georgelia? Okay. So, sorry. James and Cordelia.
James and Cordelia.
Okay. I had
or Daisy. I think that's really cute Daisy. That he calls
I
her
love
Daisy.
Daisy.
Do we know why he calls her Daisy?
No. Yeah, they explain it in the
book one.
There's something in Chain of Gold where he's there and he's sick and there's something there that he calls her Daisy. Sorry. I don't know what it is. But, okay. So, as we all know, I personally don't really love slow burn relationships to begin with. I need my payoff a little quicker. I'm like, okay, I get it, you like each other, but like I feel
you,
Christina. Already I was a little antsy from the first book.
But that's what Cassandra Clare does. It's like
she did
everything
with Jason Clary.
Dark Artifices,
don't even get me started.
Was dying in that book. I read it after you both. I'm texting you, and I'm like, I'm going to throw this book at the wall. I can't do this anymore.
And we were literally like, buckle up.
The beginning of book two, which book two and book three in Dark Artifices are a behemoth of books. They are very large. Really great, but very large. And Anna texted us beginning of book two and was like, I can't do this for a whole other book. I'm like, oh, girlfriend, you've got like 1,000 more pages.
You've got two more books to go.
I was so frustrated.
But yes. So, okay, I feel that same way. And again, like I said in my non-spoiler review, I don't know why this surprises me with Cassandra Clare. I've read all these books, whatever, like 10 before this. I don't know why it surprises me. But I find slow burn relationships to be difficult anyway in my antsiness. And then not all we get in this book to see these beautiful, lovely, like sweet moments where they're married and they're in the study and like
they play chess and cards.
And we get these glimpses of these beautiful moments with them. And I'm like, okay, I have put in my time. I have been patient.
We're getting rewarded.
My duty. I get a payoff. I get a reward. Cassandra, you owe it to me. And then I did. Well, I barely got like a little
bit of
a glimpse
you.
Of it.
She teased you.
She teased you.
Hold it right away again. And I'm indignant as a consumer. That's a Friends reference.
That's a Friends reference.
But I am upset about it.
I'm fine.
The line's coming out high and squeaky because really, I'm fine. But we're not fine. Jordelia! Give me Jordelia!
No, it's so frustrating.
It's really it's extra frustrating because you know they love each other and they said it. They have both said it.
I mean, okay, are we
going
to jump into like what we're frustrated with? Because I feel like we're there.
We can wait till the end.
I mean, okay, you want to wait?
You're right.
Okay, we can wait. Okay, I mean, yeah. So I think that freaking bracelet. Can we just talk, like, that whole time he's wearing that bracelet while they're married. And every time he, like, it's so clear that he, like, actually loves Cordelia. And that's what's allowing him to kind of battle the bracelet's power in a way. And every time he gets close to her and something might happen, he gets a freaking headache. And he's like, oh, ouch. And he gets, like, a burn from the bracelet. And you're just like.
It's burning his wrist.
Damn it, Grace. Your stupid bracelet.
He's like, what could be happening?
If we didn't get those insights into his head, though, where we saw that he was feeling this way and he was battling the feelings with Cordelia and all that stuff, I would have, I don't know if I would have finished the book. Like, if I really thought that
there were so many sweet moments.
That's why it made it so hard. He was so sweet.
I love him so
like
much.
Like, when he gives her the bracelet. I love that moment. Oh, sorry, not the bracelet. Sorry. Oh, God, no.
Like,
when he
no
gives
more
her the necklace, yes. It is such a
no
sweet moment.
No more jewelry!
It's before they go to their first
sweet.
Ball together, right?
Yes. Which also, I really loved a moment at that ball when she was like, husbands don't dance with their wives at this. And he goes, this husband does.
So sweet. So
I was like, James.
And like I just love this like little line he says to her when he gives her the necklace and it's apparently a globe because they talk about
travel so much.
And he says, we have talked so much of travel. I wanted to give you the world. And I was like, that's corny, but that's cute.
She puts corny stuff in here, and I'm here for it. I love it. I eat it up.
But you guys, also the house, like him decorating the
whole house for her.
With the Persian prince and like every detail was for her.
Also,
he like shows her around and he's all nervous
he's so
that she's
excited.
Not gonna like it.
Also, whenever she was disappointed they weren't sharing a bed, I was like, me too, girl. I'm disappointed for
me
you
too.
That you're not sharing a bed.
Me too. We're all disappointed.
Also, just something about the globe and the travel. Whenever he's having, there's some part where he's having a really hard time and the bracelet's hurting him and he's like going in and out of the shadow world and everyone's around him and he like puts his head down and he closes his eyes and all his friends are there and he just goes, Daisy. And she comes over and he's like, Constantinople. And she just like whispers to him. He's like, okay. And she knows what he needs. And she just talks to him about Constantinople, like, in his ear, because it calms him down hearing her talk about this place. And
oh my God.
Also, I think my favorite James quote to her, there was a lot of really good ones, but one of my favorite ones was when, at the end, when he says, you're my constant star, Daisy. Mm. So freaking sweet.
You guys, I love him so, like, I was so Team Will in Infernal Devices. Like,
I know
Jim was
girl.
A little sweetheart.
Oh, yeah, I was
But,
too.
Like, there was no competition for me. Like, Tessa and Will belong together. And so to see his son just be like, I just love it so much. I just love it.
Also,
I
we got some
James.
Good Will moments.
This is the thing that Cece does, is that she plants all these little tiny nuggets that make you love them together. And then the ending happens, and you're just like, great. Fabulous.
But that's why
my
I felt manipulated.
Heart has been wrenched from my body. Thank you.
Oh, okay. So one thing I just want to say about Will really quick and then also just tying into James. Okay. So this is on page 161 and James is just having this lovely, beautiful, quiet night with Cordelia, and they're talking in the study by the fire, and they're learning things about each other, and they're playing chess. And then he says, James says, he recalled when he was a boy and the whole family had gathered in the drawing room, seeing an expression on his father's face that James always thought of as the quiet look. Will's blue gaze would travel over his wife, tracing every line of her as if he were memorizing her all over again, and then his children, and a look of happiness that was sharp and gentle at the same time would come over his face. James knew now, though, what his father had been thinking when he got the quiet look. It was the same thought he had in the study at night, watching the light of the fire pass through Cordelia's unbound red hair, listening to her laugh, seeing the graceful movements of her hands in the warm lamplight. How do I live in this moment forever and not let it go?
Oh, that is such an amazing
Because then we get to have this little insight
into Will being a dad, sitting there with Tessa, looking at her and then looking at his kids. And then James feeling that way.
I just love Will and Tessa so much. I love
Will. Me too. Guys, remember when they leave the ball and they come upon Will and Tessa and he's like, James is like, they're about to start kissing. Like, trust me, I know. Or like something like that. Or he says something like, trust me.
they're probably about to start kissing. Oh my God. And then the demon shows up and he looks at Tessa like, he's like, Tessa, please, can I go?
Can I go get the demon?
And she's like, go along.
She's like, go ahead. And he like whoops off.
So cute.
It's such a cute moment.
I love that.
I love those little snapshots.
And really into their family dynamic.
Will and Tessa, I think Will squeals
running into the night after the demon. Like, it's so cute.
He does. He's like happily squealing and like they're all just like sitting there like laughing and Tessa's just like looking at him like, oh, Will.
I love you guys so much.
Okay.
Really quickly, another James.
Go ahead.
Tied into Will moment, kind of Will. I forgot about the moment where at the wedding, you have this moment where you realize that Jim is in the courtyard playing violin because he couldn't come in. So he's playing it outside.
That's right. I forgot.
And then he looks at his parents and they're both crying. And it's so sweet.
Oh my gosh.
That he's like in the courtyard playing violin for their son's wedding, but he can't come in. And it's so sweet. Oh, that just touched my heart.
And I, again, you see Will cry and you see Will like emote things so openly and it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful, guys,
I love that she does that and it's so natural and it's so beautiful.
Exactly. Like it should be.
But just to see that moment where he's just like crying because
his best friends
and one of the loves of his life. I mean, so sweet. Okay. Anything else about the gray-slit that we haven't?
No, the headaches. No, just that when James and Cordelia kiss.
Which time?
When he's,
tied
to the bed.
Also, I was like.
That came out sounding a lot more sexual than it should be. Whenever they tied him up
and then she was like, I want to kiss you, I was like, oh, are we going here, Cassandra?
We're going there.
No.
So when they timed James up because they're worried that he's actually being possessed at night and like the serial killer. So they timed
only
the bed to
hand,
see if
though.
He gets up
he,
at
he
night.
Didn't, they didn't tie the
and
other
Cordelia's
hand.
Just, watching just him. And
yeah, only one hand.
Just the one hand. Oh, it's 2 feet though. His two
still,
feet were tied.
Still.
And but, his one hand.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah. But anyways, so I know. And so when Cordelia and James kiss that time, she notices the crack in the bracelet and he thinks it's because he punched the wall that day because of the whole thing because of Grace. But
I think it was the power of their love.
I think it's 100%. Well, it's 100% because of what happens at the end that like the love that he actually feels for Cordelia is true love and it's breaking the spell and the compulsion spell that's on the bracelet and it cracks it. And then
we didn't even talk about that. The whole reason that he has to wear the bracelet is because Grace's enchant or her gift doesn't work on him because he's part warlock slash demon. Well, because Tessa is a warlock.
Wait,
but
he a demon? No, she's a warlock. So he's part.
Well, I mean, his grandfather is a prince of hell.
He's
not part.
His grandfather is a demon of hell.
Yeah.
Oh. Because warlocks are born from a demon
and an angel.
No, not from demon and an angel, but from demon and like a human.
A human?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a demon and a human. So Tessa is a warlock.
All right, because the demon blood
is a warlock.
Yeah. Born of a human demon.
Born of a human and a demon. Belial is a demon prince of hell. Okay.
Yeah.
The whole reason
Grace had to put the bracelet on him is because the enchantment, or whatever we want to call it, the compulsion doesn't work on him, and it also didn't work on Malcolm Fade in this book, because he's a warlock.
Yes.
So that was super interesting. I also have a tie-in. So I don't know if y'all know this, and I think I've told you before, but City of Bone, or The Mortal Instrument, started out as Harry Potter fan fiction.
Oh, I always forget about that.
Oh my gosh, I forgot.
Yes. It started out as Harry Potter fan fiction. She wrote it on Wattpad, I believe. Someone, correct me if I'm wrong. And it started out that way. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding The Mortal Instruments, especially the first three books, because I think she had previously published them as Harry Potter fanfic, and she essentially just changed a few things.
I totally forgot about this.
And published it. So there was a lot of controversy, but... something interesting that happens in this book that reminds me so much of Harry Potter is in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, when Harry is having those visions of what Voldemort is doing.
Oh my gosh.
And he becomes the snake and thinks that he is the one that attacks Mr. Weasley.
This
whole book reminded me so much of that, where James is like, there's like a fog. I don't know what's going on. Like, I can't figure out what's happening. And I think I'm attacking these people. Oh, I'm having these visions. Obviously, at this point, she's so popular in her own right that I'm not even suggesting that she would need to copy Harry Potter. But I just found that tie-in so interesting, because this started out as Harry Potter fan fiction, and so much about James's visions. Because Harry felt Voldemort, like what he was feeling and thinking, like he would get a surge of excitement.
James keeps talking about the hatred
he feels. And I found that so interesting. I was like, this is very reminiscent to me of Harry Potter.
Absolutely.
And the Order of Phoenix. So just a fun little thing. I don't know if anybody else
noticed
that.
I'm always down for a Harry Potter tie-in in anything we read ever. So
can we talk about Matthew?
Let's discuss
sweet
our
little
Matthew.
Angel boy.
Sweet angel boy Matthew. Okay. So
his banter, his lines in both of the books are top.
The best.
And it's
hysterical.
His bantery lines are just my favorite.
This is one of my favorite lines he says. It's Alistair says to Matthew, "Why are you not even wearing a hat? And cover up this hair?" Matthew indicated his golden locks with a flourish. "Would you blot out the sun?"
Oh, do y'all have the quote at the very beginning when he comes to pick up Cordelia? And he's like, they're like, "Where are you going?" And he's like, "Well, they're..."
Oh, I have it. Yeah.
Huddling down an ice thing and on a rickety...
"Hello, my dear," he said to Cordelia. "I've come to bring you to a large hill, which we will both hurtle down on rickety, out-of-control bits of wood." And then she goes,
"Keep going.
Sounds marvelous. What will we do after?" "Unaccountably, we will climb back to the top of the hill in order to do it again. It is some kind of snow-related mania," they say.
Snow-related mania.
He's so great. He has a really
interesting arc.
Him in this book, a very interesting arc in this book, and all the pain that he's going through, and just seeing him and James together, like, I still... Who has the line where James says, "I just want you to love yourself as much as I love you"?
Yeah.
I know.
And then...
That line...
Well, because he's so self-destructive, you know? Yeah.
And then Cordelia says it to Lucy, too, because at some point Lucy's like, "I really worry about him. You know, I just feel like he's so sad and I don't understand why."
Mm-hmm.
And then Cordelia says, like, something like, I think he just doesn't love himself.
And Lucy says, like, "What is there not to love?"
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
And it's so sad because he hasn't told anybody what the reason why he drinks and
why
he's so self-loathing. Well, that's what I mean. He hasn't told anyone until this book. And I mean, when did that happen? Like 4 years ago? It's when they were in school. So, I mean, it's been a while, and he's on a self-destructive path ever since then. And,
which
I really hate that, like, just going, this ties into Matthew, but the fact that James has the bracelet on, I always thought that it was supposed to make him forget about Cordelia, but apparently it also makes his brain foggy in regards to, like, everything.
Yeah.
Oh. And because this entire book that I've been reading, this entire time we've been reading these two books, I'm like, James, you're supposed to be his Matthew's parabatai, and you two normally don't have any issues talking about stuff, but you won't confront him on his drinking, and it is so self-destructive, and it is clear that he is hurting. He is hurting so much, and nobody says anything to him. Nobody, and I understand that Matthew will change the subject. He is the king of deflecting.
Right.
But at some point,
James says something to him. They have a very intense conversation. Remember when he says, like, what will you love more than that bottle in your hand? And they both like freeze because they're like, oh, James even says then, like, oh, it's the thing we aren't supposed to talk about. I'm like, but why? Why are you not supposed to talk about it? You're his parabatai. Like, you guys are like brothers. Like, why is no one saying anything to him about his drinking ever? Like, it's so frustrating because these group of guys
that's what I don't get at all.
Open with each other, and they're so loving. And then it's like this blatant thing that everyone is just...
It's a big disconnect.
Right. It just... Yeah. I don't... They're...
Because she does write them, like, we were just bragging about how much they are how open they are with each other and how much they care about each other. And then you have this one really big thing amongst best friends, as close as best friends can possibly be. And they won't talk to him, and he's hurting so much.
And it's so obvious. Like, it's so obvious that he has a drinking, like, his hands are shaking. Everyone notices it. And like Lucy, Cordelia, like everybody is just like, oh, do, 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 do.
It has to be so triggering too for, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's like Cordelia. I feel like that would be after she, you know, with her father, Elias.
I think that's also like, Cordelia shouldn't have to be the one to address this with him.
No, it should be James.
Yeah.
And then he finally says something at the end, and he's like, oh, no. And like, what, why? Why no?
I do like that at the end, which we will get there, we will get to the whole everything about this dynamic in a little bit. But I do like that in the conversation that happens at the end with Matthew and Cordelia about going to Paris, that she says to him, point blank, if we go, will you not drink? We can have like champagne or wine or something, but no, like
heavy
liquor,
no heavy drinking
to forget. And he says, if I'm in Paris with you, I will have nothing to forget.
You guys. Mm.
And I wonder if it's a product of the time period, like the Edwardian time period, that the drinking is like, I don't know how much, like if this was Jace or Alec in the Mortal Instruments drinking like this, I don't know if it would be, I think it would have been addressed a lot
That's
sooner.
A good point,
I agree.
But I think the time period where people drank a lot younger and things just were brushed under the rug in England, especially stiff upper lip and all of that. If that's part of it, because
too,
otherwise it doesn't really make sense.
Well, I think too, their relationship, and I don't know if it's, this ties into it, but it feels like, especially reading this last scene with Matthew and the way he's talking about James, I think the relationship itself at the moment is strained.
Yeah.
And that's because of Grace and because of Cordelia. Like, I think that is maybe leaking into the, like, not feeling comfortable talking about, you know, all of this stuff.
Sure.
Like, he says, Matthew says, and I love him, but I have always loved him and understood him. Now I love him, but do not understand him at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're just at a place where, like, they don't understand each other because of Grace and because of what Grace is making him do.
Sure.
Because Matthew is like, how could you do this to Cordelia? What is wrong with you? I don't understand you at all.
Yeah.
And then it just, like, is amplified.
That's a good point, Christina.
They're not on the same page right now.
And
apparently it's the bracelet's fault, so isn't that convenient?
Matthew and the bracelet and him and James not being on the same page because of Grace is a great segue into our Heavenly Fire segment.
Heavenly Fire segment. Heavenly Fire. Okay, yes, listeners. Who would like to explain to the listeners what Heavenly Fire is?
Go, Anna.
All right, so.
Besides what you know in the book, what it is.
Heavenly Fire is first, like, we first learn about it in the Mortal Instruments, and it's basically like this, like, Heavenly Fire comes, it like destroys or it helps the Shadowhunters, and it like fixes everything. Right. And it's a very convenient little like plot device that Cassandra Clare uses in the Mortal Instruments. And then as you read the rest of her series, there are all these little moments where it's what we call Heavenly Fire because it's just way too convenient. And it is a complete like easy way for her to get out of like explaining something difficult.
It's like a plot hole.
It's a plot hole that she just like sprinkles magic Heavenly Fire on.
The biggest
and fixes the situation.
The biggest example of Heavenly Fire, I won't say specifically what happens at the, is at the end of the Dark Artifices. And that is where we really, the Heavenly Fire.
Good God. The heavenly that heavenly fire, fire.
The end of the Dark Artifices.
The heavenliest
is
fire.
The heavenliest heavenly fire.
I cannot
and that's
deal
kind of
with
where
the end
we
of that
started
book.
To coin. We started to coin this phrase like, oh, well, and shocker, heavenly fire, this happens, and now everything is fine, everything is well, and
we use it in all series
yeah,
that we
it's,
read
it's
now.
It's not just
it's
a Shadowhunters.
It's just like this thing that we say. Whenever an author does something that is just
that's like so
too
convenient.
Convenient.
So
oh
convenient.
My goodness.
And guys,
oh, look,
this book was
heavenly fire.
This book was full of heavenly fire.
Full
I
of
would
it.
Say the whole book, but especially the last 20%.
Right. Yes.
Was just chock full. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. From the moment the big battle started.
Yeah. Which
So let's talk about the gun.
Okay. So
let's talk about the gun.
I had really mixed feelings on the gun, although I thought that it was really cool that it only worked for James, which we still don't know why. No. We still have no idea why it only worked for James.
I don't think that's cool. I'm like, why is it only work for James and no one knows why?
Like, I thought it was going to be a cool reveal, like power. I don't know. But I thought that was cool, but the actual fact that it's a gun to me was like, didn't like it.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be a knife or a sword or a whip. Like, we have like 2000 Shadowhunters not using guns. Like, no one's ever used a gun. And I just feel like it's a cop out. I don't like it. Like, it feels like you're cheating. Like, you're not fighting. You're just shooting someone.
Well, they talk about that in the books. The guns don't work because...
Oh, right. The gunpowder. It's something with the gunpowder.
The gunpowder doesn't work. So in order to kill a demon, you have to have the ruins on the instrument. And for some reason, guns won't fire with these magical runes on them.
Unless
you're James, apparently. Heavenly fire. And
that being said, I just wish it was like a sword or something.
Yeah,
I guess we've overdone all the other weapons. So like, what's a new weapon?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, but here's the thing. This is the big thing about the gun, and this is why it's heavenly fire. I want to have the quote ready.
I'm ready.
Here we go. Here's the thing about all of the Shadowhunter weapons, okay? They all, like, they're what are they called? They're Seraph Blades. Apparently, Princes and of Hell, as well as Lilith, who is the...
Queen of Demons.
She's the Queen of Demons.
Yeah.
Like, she can't be neither the Princess of Hell or Queen of Demons, like Lilith. She can't be killed with these Seraph Blades. But Cortana, Cordelia's weapon, can mortally wound Belial. But anyways, back to the gun. So Christopher, who's our little, like, nerdy science boy, he's been, like, trying to figure out a way to get guns to work for Shadowhunters. And he has this one gun. He's been doing tons of different spell work on it. Nobody can fire the gun because they don't work for Shadowhunters. And then James picks it up in the, you know, in his little chemistry lab, fires it, and it's like, oh, holy shit, it works.
See,
for
that,
James.
I do think that's cool.
So that's
cool.
How this whole thing starts. Yeah. But that's how this whole thing starts. So then in the big battle, Belial has the gun for some reason. Lilith shows up to the party uninvited, and she's like, ho, 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 guys, guess what? I've been pretending to be everybody in the book.
Oh.
to confuse you all. So then...
Well, that's next.
Belial tosses James the gun so James can fire at Lilith, and it works. It shoots her and it makes her, like, dissipate.
That, to me, the way you said that makes me feel like maybe that's why Belial brought it. But he didn't know Lilith was going to be there.
He didn't know.
No, he didn't know. But he also didn't know the gun would work on Lilith. But Christopher used protection spells, which are in the name of three angels. And it says, quote, they are angels of protection. In the old text, they are angels meant to protect against Lilith specifically.
Yeah.
So Christopher managed to make a Lilith killing weapon, said Anna. Most amazing. That's what she says. And it's like, there's literally, I like highlighted it and I like wrote and wrote heavenly fire. I was like, well, that was convenient.
Why would he possibly pick those? Why?
I don't know. It's just, it's frustrating. I guess that's like when you say it and like you haven't read the scene, it might not sound like a big deal. But when you're reading this entire battle scene, there's just all this going on. And then it's like you want it to end. And the way it ends is because he shoots her with a gun that like can only work against Lilith.
Yeah.
It's just so, it's too convenient. Like a cop-out. It's too convenient. Yeah.
So the gun thing was really frustrating, but the thing I think that is most frustrating is this whole Lilith, to me, being like five different people in this book.
Yeah.
Multiple people.
Yeah, so like in the final battle, Lilith shows up and you're like, what the hell? Why is she here? And then she starts changing forms, yeah, and turns out that she was pretending to be Magnus.
Also, don't you dare pretend to be Magnus. I feel like that is off limits.
I know. She was pretending to be Magnus. She was pretending to be this, like, fae.
Pretending to be a fairy who told Cordelia, yeah, about Waylon the Smith.
About Waylon the
then
Smith.
Then she pretends to be Waylon, yeah, the Smith.
Cortana wasn't working for Cordelia, so she actually goes...
It wasn't working because of Lilith. Because Lilith touched it.
That's, yeah, right. I forgot.
So pretty much Lilith, right, ruined the sword, told her how to go fix the sword, was the person there to fix the sword.
So then Lilith was obviously really Waylon the
Freaking
Smith.
Lilith.
Fixed the sword real fast and then made Cordelia swear to be Waylon's, fake Waylon's. Is it paladin?
Yeah. She like looks at Cordelia and's like, hey, do you want to be my paladin? Like, swear fealty to me. And anytime you raise your sword, it'll be in my
name. But also,
name.
It's so sad. It just breaks my heart.
Because she's
so excited. Well, no, also because Waylon, fake Waylon, real Lilith to her is like, you are a great warrior. You can do this. Only you can, like, defeat this evil. And, like, it makes her... It breaks my heart because later she's, like...
She said, I wanted so badly to be a hero.
She wanted so bad.
She wanted it to be...
She wanted it to be her.
It's so sad. Because she is a hero. Cordelia, believe in yourself.
She is. And now she really thinks she doesn't deserve Cortana.
I know.
She says at the end to Alistair, she's like, you don't understand. Like, I really don't. So,
well, it's going to get really tricky. That's the hard part.
It is.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So because she's being paladin to fake Waylon, real Lilith, that means anytime she raises her sword, Lilith can pretty much control her.
In battle.
Yeah, in battle. So, yes. So as long as she doesn't wield Cortana, then it's not a big deal. But if she picks up her sword, then Lilith can control her.
Like, that's going to get really, really messy. And we can talk about that in predictions. But poor Cordelia is now like my whole life, my training, my existence. I'm supposed to fight and be a shadow hunter. And now I can't, because if I pick up my sword, I am doing Lilith's will.
Yeah.
Like, I am able to be possessed by Lilith.
Yeah.
And she even at the end says to James, I can't be paired by tie with Lucy. How am I supposed to train with Lucy? I can't pick up my sword.
I can't protect her. I can't.
So, and she said, like, I'm not worthy of being her paired by tie. And we can't tell anybody about this. Like, we can't put off the ceremony because then there's going to be questions from the enclave about, well, why are you wanting to delay the ceremony? So she's like, well, we have to tell Lucy.
But Lucy's off. Freaking!
Oh my god, we haven't even touched on Lucy and Jesse and that whole thing and Grace and we haven't even touched on like Grace and her backstory and
we can talk about Grace and Lucy and Jesse
together. Cool. Let's do that.
So so Grace, pretty much, I think backstory chapters in this book were helpful in showing us that Grace really came to Tatiana with no one. She had nothing. She had no memory of her parents. She was bought. She was literally bought and sold as a child. She was just wanted a family so bad. And then at some point, it's so freaking sad. At some point, she is looking at Tatiana and Tatiana says to her, this is when she's trying to convince her to use her powers on Jesse, which we'll get there. But she says to her pretty much, well, you're not my daughter. We're more business partners.
She said, you are barely even a, you're barely even a daughter to me. We are partners or something.
Yeah. And it's like, this girl has given her entire life to try to please you.
She has no one. She doesn't know love. She's never
feel
had
for the girl. It's hard for me when I love the Mary Thieves and James so much to feel for her enough that I want to justify the behavior.
Well, she keeps, because here's the problem, is if she learned from her behavior and realized that, like, time and time again, every time she does this, it screws everything up. And she keeps doing the same thing over and over and over again. And at some point, you just start to be like, okay, I understand you had a really shitty upbringing and nobody loved you except your dead brother.
Oh, but you know what, though? I know why she keeps doing it. Tatiana says it in the book. She says, if you don't do what I want, I will move Jesse's body where you'll never be able to find it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Her entire existence has been about Jesse. No one else has cared for her. No one has been nice to her. You know, she is, all she has is Jesse. And that's really sad. But I also, it's hard for me to, I think there was an opportunity there for her as a character. Granted, it wouldn't have served the plot, but Grace living with Ari, living with, you know, all these people, for her to go to her uncles and be like, Gideon, Gabriel, hey, so mom's crazy. She's holding Jesse's body here. Can you help me out? Like,
right.
Again, she probably doesn't have the emotional maturity to understand that that's how you handle situations, because she's never been in a situation like that where she has someone to talk to.
To be fair, she was like a very small child when this started. So, like, I don't think exactly. She really has the capacity to understand, like, that she has options.
No, yeah.
Other than just, like, to do what... I think Cassie Clare, like, said it in Best. She was like, it might not make you like her, but it will at least help you understand her motivations to do what she does.
Yes.
And I do agree. So there's a passage I want to read. It's on page 620, if anybody wants to join me. She said, you can't blame yourself. The bracelet was forged by a prince of hell. Woven into it was the power to make those who had observed the bracelet and what it could do forget what they had seen. If you tried to think about it, if your friends or family tried to think about it, they would quickly forget. No matter your behavior, they would accept that you loved me. But you didn't, did you? You loved Cordelia despite everything. Loved her enough to shatter the spell, break the bracelet. I know I have done you an immense wrong, James, but truly, if any mortal in this world has proof of the truth of love, it is you. And he said, I cannot imagine the life you must have had, he said harshly, that would lead you to offer that to me as comfort. And she says, no, you cannot imagine my life. And that line, I really do think,
that's
like
a perfect passage.
I do think, like, when she's like, no, you can't imagine it. Like, Tatiana slaps her.
Totally.
Like, she's literally abusive to her.
She's physically, psychologically, emotionally.
Yes.
She ticks all the boxes.
It's truly awful.
Living this horrible horror story of a life. And it's not that I don't feel bad for her. I really do. I think it's just, you know, the way it's set up in the story.
Well, no, you can't help but dislike her, because she's literally the catalyst for so much pain and miscommunication, which we'll get into. And yeah, you can't like her. I mean,
I do think at the very end, though, after she says that paragraph, I think she's finally kind of reached her breaking point after that conversation.
Oh, she says, he says, I don't want to look at you. I'm going to summon the Silent Brothers. Do not think of going anywhere. They will hunt you down. And she says, you needn't worry about that. I have nowhere to go.
Oh, I think we're going to get a redemption arc, though. I think we're going to get something in the next book. She's going to do something selfless. She's going to, like, okay, this is, well, we can get to predictions. But really quickly, I feel like there's going to be a, like, I don't know, to keep Jesse alive, there's going to be, like, a life-for-life situation. And Grace is going to be like, I have no one. Let me give my life for you kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Like, and it's going to be like a redemption arc of, like, I have done so much evil.
Yeah.
Let me do this for you and the Herondales.
Let's touch on Lucy and Jesse before.
Yes, Lucy. Speaking of Lucy.
We haven't really talked about Lucy and Jesse. If anybody has anything specific.
Okay, so
the anchor thing was confusing to me.
So basically Belial just, like, I don't know, let's say that he just, like, kind of marked him.
Right.
As, like, a baby.
With some of his...
And it basically made him... Well, it somehow... He did some sort of little spell that, like, basically when he became a full-grown boy, if he died, that then Belial could possess him instead of James.
Right.
And his body wouldn't...
Because he can possess James, because James is related to him, because his, you know, because he's mm-hmm. his grandfather.
And we don't want to possess Lucy because we're sexist? Or, like, why don't we want to possess Lucy?
Apparently, you have to be able to walk in the shadow realm, and girls can't walk in the shadow realm. That's what Belial says. Who knows?
Belial says to them in the battle scene that he knew he doesn't care about Lucy because she can't walk in the shadow realm. So he basically was like, you're useless to me.
Right. Okay.
And she was like, yes. Excuse me?
Fuck you,
she's
Grandpa.
All mad about it. Like, as if she really yeah. wants Belial. Like, excuse me. It's fine.
I am important, too.
Yeah, I was like,
yeah. That's how I felt. I was like, why don't you want Lucy? She's important.
I know.
Okay. Anyways, but yes. So, Lucy, I feel very conflicted about this because I really, on one aspect, love Lucy being this. She is a writer. She wants this love story. She wants this adventure herself in Chain of Gold. She says this whole thing about how the biggest thing she wants in life is an adventure. Mm-hmm. She has found this adventure in Jesse. She is totally taking this and making this her. She's literally gone into necromancy. Like, she is going for the adventure. Mm-hmm. But I also want to be like, Lucy, think about this for 1 second before you run off with Malcolm Fade and a ghost that you have done necromancy with. See, okay, that's one side of my feelings. The other side of my feelings is like, oh, they're so cute. And when they danced in the snow.
Oh, that was great.
And he told her, if you write a happy ending for us. And he was like, you're my heroine. It's just, I love their story. And I love that Lucy's having that romance. Yeah. So I want it for her. And so it's hard for me to want her to kind of be a little more responsible. But I also want this adventure and love for her.
Mm-hmm. Very well put.
Well, I think it goes back to, like, a lot of our issues with the book is that the secrecy. Ugh. Like, I really love the moments between Lucy mm-hmm. and Jesse yeah. and
it's Lucy's beautiful.
Like you know, Cassandra Clare can have 10 characters in a book and they all have very distinct voices.
Yes.
And it's really fun to read Lucy's voice because I think you're right. I think in a lot of ways she is a little mm-hmm. bit younger than the rest
she
of the
reads
group.
Younger.
She reads younger. I don't think that she mentally she's very observant, but I think she has this such a romantic ideal of everything.
That's why she reads it.
And it's really kind of it's a wonderful part of her character, but at the same time, like when it comes to Jesse, she's so fixated and she's working with Grace and trying to figure out a way to resurrect him. Part of the big issue I had was with this, and then it goes into so much of the book, is the secrecy mm-hmm. behind it. Like, why couldn't she tell mm-hmm. Cordelia? Why wouldn't she tell yeah. Cordelia? Like, it's no secret that the Herondales can see
right.
I read that it's no secret. As she didn't want to tell Cordelia because she didn't want to tell Cordelia that she was working so closely with Grace because she didn't want anyone to know she was, like, BFFs with Grace because everyone hates Grace.
But then how does Cordelia feel at the end?
Oh, totally.
It's yeah. like, wait, what? No one, what?
Totally. It backfired
Lucy's
completely.
Not even telling me what she's doing. Why is she talking to Grace?
Yeah, the whole secrecy and miscommunication was one of my biggest issues with this whole book. Like, there's so much that is purposely left unsaid, and there's yes. There's no real logical reason for it. Yes, it can be explained
in
away.
every storyline there's a secret left unsaid.
Like, just speak to each other, please speak to each other.
This is a perfect segue into, like, airing yes. of the grievances, yeah. which I feel like we've been doing a little bit of throughout this, but there are, like,
okay.
a few things that we really have to touch upon. We have some grievances and they need to be discussed. They need to be aired.
They need to be aired. Okay, so this is also something I found on the Tumblr. Secrets. Someone posted, which we will repost on our Instagram stories. But it says, every single character in Chain of Iron, every 15 pages. Oh no, I can't tell person X critical and piece of information. Why? Because of this extremely dumb and inane reason. Wow, now I'm super surprised that my keeping this secret made situation Y even worse.
Yeah.
it's just...
It's so true, though.
That's...
It's, like, literally that's the entire yeah. book. And it's so frustrating. The first, like... Okay, have, like, one of those things. Have one of those things throughout the book that you're like, okay, God, why aren't they telling this? Or, okay, they keep trying to tell each other something, and it keeps screwing everything up. But when you have every single character totally. Trying to keep a secret and not sharing things, it's like, well, yeah, what did you think
yeah,
was going
like,
to happen?
I think that is partially why the Thomas and Alistair sanctuary scene felt like such, like, this breath of
yes.
fresh, like, oh my gosh, we're telling each other how we feel. Look at us being emotionally, like, yes, granted, it took us a lot of emotional immaturity to get there, but we're here and we're telling each other how
Agreed.
We feel. And this is so exciting. And then that didn't last long. And by the end, we've lost all the progress we've made there. But if we're focusing on that one scene, it felt especially great, I think, because everyone else is keeping all these secrets, mm-hmm. to have two characters tell each yeah. other how they felt. Because
normally all of her characters, all of her characters normally start these conversations, and then they always get interrupted. How many times has freaking James tried to tell Cordelia door. How he feels, and then somebody knocks on the door, the doorbell rings, somebody walks door. In.
Also, you pay Effie to answer that door. Like, what are you doing?
Where is she? You have a maid. You have a housekeeper. Let them do their job. Answer the
door. Also, Effie's so mean to them. Why
she
are you
really
like,
is.
Yeah.
I like her. She's got sass.
Don't answer the door. Like, just, oh my God.
Okay, so should we just go into the answering the door moment? Because let's just do it. Yeah. Okay. So we're getting, oh my God. We're getting far enough in. We got to just do
okay.
it. Okay.
So, yeah. Okay, so the very end, towards the very end, finally, the bracelet has broken off.
Oh,
okay?
We are there.
The fog has been lifted. We are all praising the Shadowhunter gods.
Thank
like,
you.
It's
Thank
happened.
Thank you.
The big battle scene is over. James and Cordelia are back at their home that they have together. They're sitting in their special place. They're talking. They share this wonderful kiss, and it's sweet. And
he says to her, oh, gosh. Okay. She says, but I cannot rely on you so completely, cannot behave as if this is a real marriage. It is not. We both must remember that. It is, he said roughly, what we have is a real marriage. She looked at him squarely. Can you feel about me as you felt about her, about Grace? He felt a twisting inside him. Anger, revulsion. He thought about the bracelet, the two broken pieces in his pocket. No, he said almost savagely. I do not feel about you at all as I felt about Grace, how I ever felt about Grace.
Why would you say it that way?
Why just say yep. what you yep. mean and mean
Why
what
would
you
say it that way?
This is like, you just don't, just say like, don't be weird.
Okay,
don't
wait.
Don't be vague.
Then, okay, like, so then the doorbell rings, okay? That, he said, is almost certainly my father. I had rather expected he might arrive. Okay, so then Cordelia nods.
So yeah, he sends Cordelia, goes upstairs.
But,
he tells
but he
her to
says
wait.
To her, though. She says, like, okay, you should talk to your dad. And he said, no, I'm going to sit. I'm not going to talk to him, Daisy. I'm going to send him away. We must talk, you and I. It's past time for it. I want to talk to you. He kissed her forehead. Wait for me upstairs in your room. There's a great deal I need to explain. It's desperately important.
Then just explain it to her, James.
Like, then just explain
then
it,
just
James.
Do it, Jane.
You just spent like 30 seconds telling her that you
exactly.
needed to talk to her. Just tell her.
In those 30 seconds, just say, the curse is broken. It was a curse bracelet. It's gone. I don't love Grace. I love you. There.
Done. What was that?
Done.
5 seconds?
5 seconds.
Now I will go answer the door. Will you please wait in your room?
No, come with me.
No, don't wait in the room.
Come with me.
Stand with me. Stand beside me, wife. Stand beside me while I open the door. Please, come stand here, between me and the door, please. And we, as a unit, will open the door to our household to see who is there. Because if it's his father, she can be there.
Because
like, why are we,
yeah,
what?
Why can't oh. she be present when Will is there? Like, why?
God.
I don't know. So then he goes to open the door and...
I need more
oh,
wine.
Oh, no. Surprise, surprise. It's not his dad. It's Grace. And she's crying.
So she jumps. She dumps betwixt his arms. Okay. So she jumps on him like a little
koala
demon that she is. Okay. So she jumps on him pretty much and says, oh, God. Okay. James, I came as soon as I got the message. What message?
What message?
He didn't ask. Okay. I had to tell you, darling, she went on. I'm going to end it with Charles. I cannot bear it anymore, James. I will not marry him. There never was anyone for me but you. The next text. Thank God, he said.
Really? Thank God?
He saw her smile. Now was his chance. He drew back and reached around her to slam the door shut, bolting it. When he turned back to her and caught at her hand, cold and bony in his, she let him take it almost eagerly. Didn't she wonder where Cordelia was, James thought? I'm sorry. Do you not wonder where Cordelia is, James? Because I'm pretty sure she is directly behind you on the stairs listening to this and getting her heart broken.
This part made me...
Okay. Thank God, he said again. Thank God and the angel that this farce is finally over.
But he means, like, this farce between us and the bracelet. Cordelia thinks that he means their marriage.
Ugh.
Just be like,
I am so
why would you even say
fucking frustrated.
Thank God? Like, of all the things in your mind, you're so mad at her. And all you
why
can
didn't
say
you just
is,
say, what are you doing here?
What are you doing here? Why are you
why
here,
Why are you
Grace?
Here?
Or let's say, for instance, for some stupid reason, you're like, Cordelia, go upstairs. You don't want her to stay there. Don't get it, but fine.
Doesn't make any sense,
then
but fine.
You answer and you see Grace. And she says, she flings herself in your arms and said, I'm going to end it with Charles. Your reaction, logically, let me take these arms off me, yeah. put you down. What? Cordelia, darling, could you please come down here?
Cordelia, like, please hasten. Hello? Please hasten down to the drawing
please
room.
Please hasten from your bedchamber.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Also, let's be real. He probably could have just turned around and seen her on the stairs because she's there.
She's there.
So
she's watching.
Watching. Yeah.
Oh, Cordelia, I'm so glad you're here.
I do. So here's where I feel a little manipulated. Now, okay, I don't use the term YA in a negative way in any way, shape, or form. But I feel that I am looking at this as a 31-year-old adult.
Agreed.
And this is why I'm so angry. And this is why I'm
agreed.
Like, okay, I can put up with a lot of this angst. But this is not angst. This is you manipulating me, Cassandra, and putting these high school emotions into hyperdrive in within a shitty situation.
Yep.
So, like, I feel...
Especially because...
angry
it's
about
like,
it.
It's, it. Yes, it, yes, it's YA, and we don't use that, like, in a negative term. It's
no.
just that, it's just, and they are, they're 18 years old. The difference
there's
is...
there's a lot of emotions.
...is that these 18-year-olds are out there, they grow up so fast because their lifespans are
yeah.
so short. They go out, they're killing, they're destroying demons, they're traveling into, like, other universes. They have magic. They are warriors. They are not your typical 18-year-old. You would think that the emotional growth would be a little bit higher.
Yes.
Because of that.
Aww.
It's not like they're walking outside and Cordelia happened to be around the corner and he didn't know she was around the corner and he says something and she only hears a certain
she's
word.
Right
you're
there.
In your own fucking house.
Home.
She is upstairs.
Waiting for you.
And you say thank God.
Not even upstairs. She probably made it halfway up those stairs. Halfway up those stairs. Not even... Not. But half a page ago she left
she's
to go up those stairs.
Only three stairs up.
Okay. So now...
So, okay.
Here we go. So that ridiculousness happened. Fine. Now, she, being halfway up the stairs, heard this. She's a logical girl. She was like, oh, wow. Grace is in his arms. He said, thank God. He then takes her into the study and locks
the door.
So, therefore, logical Cordelia is like,
well, this farce is over.
Runs out the door and goes to
Matthew.
Sweet, sweet Matthew.
Because Matthew is the only one that knows that she actually is in love with James.
Right.
And exactly. So she goes to Matthew because she feels safe there.
She can talk
to
him about
it. And then what happens? This is what pissed me off. Maybe more than anything else. He tells her that he loves her. Which, that in and of itself doesn't anger me. I am very, I think Matthew deserves love. He has actually been one, aside from the drinking, he's been the more sane one about their relationship this entire book and has
yes,
really critiqued
agreed.
James and said, James, what the fuck are you doing? Stop messing with Cordelia's feelings. And he tells Cordelia that he loves her. And it's just heartbreaking because he really, because Matthew really, he doesn't know, neither Cordelia or Matthew knew about the bracelet. So they have no idea that this bracelet was like the reason why James was saying that he loved Grace and that the bracelet is now broken. So they both really do think that, yeah, okay, James and Grace are together and we don't understand it. And Matthew's like, look, you don't have to love me, but you need a break. You need to clear your mind. I need to clear my mind and stop drinking. So let's go clear our minds together in Paris because, hey, Paris is cool.
Because why not?
And maybe you'll fall in love with me there.
Yeah, because it's Paris.
Yep.
And
I think what made me so angry was this is exactly what happens in the Infernal Devices.
This
is
exact
so,
same. Gem will Tessa.
It's the exact same thing.
Two Peripidies in love with the same girl.
Yes. And the frustrating thing is this, is when we all read The Infernal Devices together, we all agreed that it was the most well-done love triangle that we had ever read and that we don't usually mm-hmm. like love triangles, but this was so well done and so well written that we loved it so much and you could really feel the struggle between Will and Jim and Tessa and everything. And she literally copied it.
It's exactly
it's
the same.
It's so
and
frustrating.
And you're right, Kim. We all read that book and we all hate love triangles. I mean, they're just notoriously bad ideas. And,
yeah.
But that one specific one was so well written. It destroys you in the book. It's beautiful. And the friendship between Will and Jem.
It's the only love triangle
I've
ever liked.
It's the only love triangle yeah. I've ever liked. And it's done so perfectly. And then to end this book with, like, trying to, like, recreate that, I'm like, no, stop. You have mm-mm. something so perfect that you've already done. Why would you go and do it again?
Now, and I think I'm curious what y'all's opinion is on this. Because I don't remember the exact place in the book. And maybe any listeners, if you remember this, please let us know. But isn't there a place in the book where Cordelia specifically says that she does not have romantic feelings for Matthew?
Yeah.
In her head or to us or to anything?
Yeah.
Yes. I think there's a place where we get in the canon, we get in the book that she does not have romantic feelings.
I'm pretty sure.
So that to me feels like this is going to be sad for Matthew, but I don't see Cordelia wavering on that. Like, I actually don't think we're going to get a full love triangle because no. I don't think Cordelia's going to go for it.
I don't know.
I don't know if that's true, but
if James carries on the way he's carrying on, we could go an entire three quarters of the book and he doesn't tell Cordelia he actually likes her. He's not going to write her a goddamn letter while she's in Paris. And she's going to be like, well, I guess James doesn't give a shit.
But I mean, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she will go to Paris and actually, like, something will happen there.
I don't think so. Okay, let's touch on...
Yes. Oh, wait, sorry. One more really, really quick thing, just on the love triangle thing. I also don't know... I don't know if Matthew actually loves Cordelia as much as he loves the unattainable person.
Oh, perhaps.
Well, yeah, no, I think he really is self-destructive in that way. Like, I think he doesn't realize he's doing it, but he seeks to love people who will not return his affection or are unattainable.
Anna said at some point, Matthew prefers a hopeless love.
I would agree with that.
Yes.
But yes, okay, so.
Okay, I think the last really frustrating part we need to discuss, and then we do need to move on to other stuff, is the get on the train.
Get on the train.
Okay, yes. So, Matthew, okay, so she goes to Matthew. Matthew's like, let's go to Paris. And she's like, what? And he's like, yes, we'll forget in Paris.
But, like, let's not wait till tomorrow. So then, let's go right now.
Let's go
literally
because
the second.
Because she's like, I don't have anything to wear. And he's like, we'll get you stuff. And she's like, okay.
I do love that. He's like, don't worry, I've got money. I'll outfit you.
So, all that happens. And then, oh, God, James.
Ends up, he, like, of course, Cordelia's not upstairs anymore after he's done with his conversation with Grace. So then he, like, tries to run after her, and he, like, ends up at Matthew's house. The neighbor is like, oh, yeah, I just saw him run off with some girl to the train station. They're going to Paris. He's like, that's my wife. It's very awkward. So then he goes to the train station, and he sees them getting on the train, and he's about to go to them, and his dad arrives. And his dad is like, wait. Because, oh, by the way, Lucy raised Jesse from the dead and then passed out and she's missing. So anyways, so then Will shows up and he's like, James, we have to go find your sister. She's missing. Her and Jesse's body are missing.
Oh, and Malcolm Fade are missing.
You know, Jesse's like, oh no, like, or sorry, James is like, I don't know what to do. Which way do I go? Do I go to my wife or do I go help my sister?
You go to your
Will
wife.
Even tells him, Will says, go tell Cordelia what you have to do. And James goes to go tell Cordelia, and he looks at them on the train, and he, like, imagines them sitting comfortably in their plush train seats, and he's like, no, like, I'll let them have this moment of happiness. What? No one's happy right now, James. Cordelia thinks you don't love her and that, like, you led her on. Nobody is happy. Get on the train. Get on the train. Get on the train.
Get on the train. He could have yelled.
All he had to do was say, Cordelia, it's all been a mistake. You don't, like, it's not what you think.
Yes.
I love you. You go to Paris. But I will meet you in Paris. I have to find my sister. Bye.
There was a cursed bracelet. I'm going to save Lucy.
Literally, so frustrating.
Anything. Just like, that. Like, he could have just, like, popped his head on the train and just yelled. Like, he could have just even screamed, I love you, Daisy. I don't love Grace. Just those words would have been fine.
Something.
Anything at all. And instead, he does nothing. I really, she would have been like, hey, Dad, I'm trying not to make the same mistake you did. Can you just let me go talk to them? I'll be back in the morning. Tell Lucy she'll understand. Like,
I don't get it. She won't even know that I'm not there. She's asleep.
She doesn't know because she's... It's so frustrating.
Is literally nothing happens, everything happens, and it's very confusing.
That is exactly
and frustrating.
Like the final battle scene was so rushed. The miscommunication was my biggest frustration, and that kind of encompasses like everything we just talked about. Like purposeful and willing miscommunication.
Yes. All right.
I think we should move on to book three predictions.
Okay. So yes,
okay,
quickly
let's do
book
it.
Three predictions.
So
yeah, go.
Obviously Cordelia and Lilith is gonna be a thing with like her whole being a paladin to Lilith, and this is gonna like it's going to be complicated. Absolutely. And she's not going to be able to use Cortana. And, like, I'm sure there's going to be, like, Silent Brothers involved. And
that's going to be sad. That's going to be I hate to say it. I don't know how they're going to be pair of tie. I don't know how we're going to do the pair of tie ceremony. I don't know how we're going to do that if she can't raise Cortana. Maybe that'll be a really dramatic scene.
I was like, well, if she's with James.
Maybe it'll be like really
dramatic. I wonder if like you can do it if you're pregnant. Like what if she says she's pregnant?
Oh, like maybe you can't enter the flames if you're pregnant or something? Mm-hmm. Interesting. I feel like.
I was just trying to think of like a reason that they were that they would be like.
I feel like maybe that'll be an interesting like, okay, she's like, Lucy's like, no. It's okay.
No,
let's
you guys,
be pair of tie. And then in the scene, Lilith's going to come in and like make her like do like a big thing with Cortana in the scene.
It's going to be that Lucy is like recovering from raising Jesse from the dead. Oh. And Will and Tessa are going to go petition the Enclave to like that she's sick or she has like a fever or she has like the scarlet fever, whatever Will,
you know what?
Or whatever
or maybe,
James had.
Maybe we're going to spend a lot of book three not being able to find Lucy. Maybe Lucy's like gone with Malcolm and Jesse.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. So that's
okay. So then, you know, I think probably at some point Matthew has to tell James at the very least, and I think he'll probably tell his family. I think that the truth is going to come out. I hope.
Oh, about his yes,
like about Matthew and like the thing that he did when he was a kid, and like accidentally poisoning his mom.
Even Cordelia was like, "You have to tell your mom. Just tell her."
Yeah,
like, I think that'll come out.
It's gonna. That's the only way he's gonna be able to heal fully. Okay, so. Then, like, the whole, like, Jesse thing. Is he going to stay alive? I actually liked I liked your theory about Grace.
Oh, yes. Like, maybe there's a, like, life for a life
maybe
situation.
She, like, yeah,
it
life
just
for
seems
a life
too easy at this point that, like, Jesse's just alive. But Jesse has to survive because also that's the only way we can get the Blackthorn kids. Because the Blackthorns, he's the only male Blackthorn.
All 75
that's
of
true.
Them.
He's the last surviving
heir. He's the only male Blackthorn.
He's the last surviving
heir. So I think that he has to survive.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think Jesse will stay alive, but I like your theory that Grace will sacrifice herself.
Yeah, like it's
Jesse.
Like a redemption somehow. I don't know.
Okay.
So there we go.
Oh, man, guys, we did it.
We did
we
it.
We have another year, only a mere year until we get to see our friends again.
Only a mere year until we're back for Chain of Thorns, I believe is the
Chain
third
of Thorns,
title of the third
which
book.
I believe the Blackthorn crest is just like a literal, looks like a chain of thorns.
It is. Yes.
Which is interesting.
I wonder if the cover will be black.
Oh, that's something else I wanted to say. So the covers so far have been Lucy and Cordelia. So I think the cover has to be Grace with like her white silver hair.
Grace.
It's going to be like somehow pretty with stuff in her hair, you know?
Ooh. Yes.
Thorns.
It's going to be Grace.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really pretty.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
And she's a adopted Blackthorn.
Blackthorn.
She's a Cartwright, but she's an adopted Blackthorn.
Yeah.
And Cassie Clare has reposted a lot of fan art about Grace specifically lately.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we want to hear all of your thoughts about Chain of Iron. You can find us on Instagram at Flights of Fantasy Podcast.
Yes.
We want to hear all of your thoughts. Tell us all your theories, hot takes.
We have lots of hot takes,
everything.
Clearly.
Questions, we have them too.
We're ready to chat in the DMs.
We
want
to talk
to
you about it.
Comment, DM us.
Yes. And then also our next episode.
Oh, I'm so excited about this.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so excited.
Me too.
Okay, so in honor of Women's History Month, we decided to do a special episode that is going to focus on our kind of like our favorite female characters in books that we've read, female friendships. We're going to talk about a lot of different series.
Like badass women.
Yeah. More on that coming up. So
we're really excited.
So be sure to subscribe to us wherever you are listening to podcasts and tune into that next episode. And until then, happy reading.
Yeah.
Happy reading. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye. Get on the train.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.